Another episode of Off the Rails, the Millennial's Guide to Books, Art, Culture, Music, and everything in between, where tangents are always encouraged. I'm Imogen Marshall, and with me is my lovely co-host. Do you want to say hi?
I'm not sure about you, but I'm so happy that the world has begun to reopen this week.
Yeah, I guess it was, well, no, actually, I think we're almost, this will be coming out a few days later. Yeah, it's just nice now, like for those in the UK, you know, we can outdoor dine, we can go into shops, we can go and get all beauty treatments, as we were just discussing before the podcast started. I have had a week of pampering and it's been so nice. Yeah, it's nice feeling that things are back, but more back to normal.
Yeah, yeah. I spent this week going like vintage clothes shopping.
So nice.
Charity shops were open again, which I just loved. And I went down Brick Lane and just actually seeing people.
Yeah. And like even yesterday, I mean, I've literally just been eating my way around London, I swear. Like, first of all, it's impossible to get a reservation. So I'm glad I've got some friends who are like perennially organized and have made reservations way ahead of time. But it was so nice. Like last night, I saw my friend, we're just like, oh, do you fancy going for a drink? And you just go for a drink around the corner. And it was so nice being able to, like, you know, have a happy hour and order a cocktail and not have to make it yourself.
Yeah, I think it's at a point now where, like, if, like, a waiter or, like, a waitress would be like, do you want a drink? Instead of, like, giving them my order, I just go, yes, anything. Yes.
Just bring me whatever you can make. That's fine. Oh, yeah, it does feel like we've kind of gone over a little... Like we're getting there. It really feels like we're getting there now, and which is nice. How's your week been then generally? Do you feel just lighter now that everything's opening up?
Just that's the fact that everything's opening back up again. The weather's been quite nice this week.
It's been nice. Apart from the snow at the beginning of the week. What was that about?
That snow was there. I'd be like going to work and I'd literally be driving through the seasons. Going from my house, going to work with it being like snowing and how, and then oh, it's all sunny and it's over 10 degrees here.
So the UK's mental.
Yeah.
Mental place.
I don't think it can make up its mind this week.
No, it really, really can't. Been the highlight of your week? Any highs and lows?
Oh, highlight of my week. I finally finished reading Firefly Lane.
You did.
It's one of the biggest books I've read this year. It's not the biggest book I've ever, but it's, I want to say, just over 400 pages, and that's normally a big book for me. Normally my book
is
200 pages.
I think the 200 to 300 is like a sweet spot of particularly like a literary fiction book. I think that's about the length it kind of is, like that for me is the sweet spot.
Yeah, so I was happy that I finished reading that, because I was being so strict with myself, saying I can't watch a TV series until I finish the book. So I'm very happy that I got to read that, and then my treat to myself was then binge watching it on Netflix. So it took me a few weeks to read this book, not because it dragged, but just because I had time to read it all in one go. Mm-hmm. And I binge watched like all the episodes in about a day.
I love it. It is a very binge-worthy show.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. What's been the highlight of your week?
Oh, it was my birthday. Getting old. No, it was just nice. It was so nice seeing a few friends from who don't live in the city. Obviously haven't seen in months. That was so lovely to see them. And I don't know, I always get really weirdly emotional on my birthday, because half of my friends have just got the most amazing way with words, and they'll write cards to me and I will just cry. I just, like, I'm someone who's very much like, I just adore my friends to bits, and whenever they say things back to me that is like any form of sentiment, I just cry. And one of my best friends made me like a scrapbook of all our memories, and we went to New Zealand together like 4 years ago, and she had put in the scrapbook the even like the like little things like the car booking we'd done for our trip to New Zealand. Which, first of all, was the world's worst car in the world. We got overtaken by a lorry trailing another lorry up a hill. Like, it was the worst car in the world. But it was just, yeah, so I feel like I always get very emotional on my birthday when, like, little, like, things that mean for one. Just, so, yeah.
I imagine that New Zealand car being very much like the Flintstone car where you're, like, basically like, running with your feet.
Honestly, it was the world's worst car in the world. And we called it Moana. I don't even know why, because Moana, the film, is not set in New Zealand. And we had a sat-nav and we called it Daryl, because Daryl was the most annoying person ever who got us lost all the time. Yeah, just a little insight to being on holiday. So that has been my week. I guess, should we get into sort of our discussion of the episode, what we're going to talk about? Because this week we want to talk about all things books versus the movie and that long hallowed debate about which is better.
Yeah, and I think especially like the weeks leading up to like the roadmap plans opening up, we've had so much time to read so many books and then binge watch so much Netflix, and then we've had extra time to judge both of them.
Oh my god, my favorite thing to do, judge things. So I think we both kind of picked out a few bits of particular ones we want to discuss. Obviously we're not going to discuss everything because that would be like 1,000 books, but I think we're going to go first with our picks for when the film was better than the book, which is quite a controversial one.
Yeah.
Do you want to say one of your picks first?
I'm kind of tied with this. Okay. So, sticking with Firefly Lane by Hannah. Not that... So, I've put on the category that the film was better, but only because it brought such a good story out. The story was already great to life, and it had like all these little quotes and all these kind of things about the friendship between the two girls and Julie and Kate that you couldn't really express in the books. It'd be like body language.
Yeah.
Because the book was amazing. Like, it's literally a book that like kept me up at night, and I'll be up reading. I'll be so tired in the morning. I'll be like, I got to read like from the 70s to the 80s.
Yeah.
And I just think the way they go through all the decades in the show is just, oh, it's so just like aesthetically really nice to watch. And I like a good film and like TV series about female.
I think it did flesh it out a lot more. I felt like the story, the book was a little bit, not drier, that's the wrong word. But I think, I actually don't think it's one of Chris, I don't think it's her best novel. So I always was really interested why that one they picked to become a TV show, because she's got so many books out there. But I think it was so much more fun with all the, you know, costumes and what they did with it. I really liked that.
Yeah, because I think I went into reading the book thinking it's going to be like another, like just a modern day Beaches.
Yeah.
But it was so much more grittier, and like, and a lot happened like throughout the years of friendship. So much happens, like good and bad. Mm-hmm. And I just find it's quite relatable, not in the sense of that you always have to relate rather to Tuli, or you have to always relate rather to Kate, but just the situations that pop up in female friendships. I really like explored that.
Yeah, it was really good. I would agree with that. I've actually gonna skip. I don't know why that one's there. Okay, my top pick was actually Rim by Emma Donoghue. Because, so... the book is very clever. It's very simplistic in that it's written as if someone had grown up in this room and their like worldview is very narrow and they don't know the words for things. They don't, you know, they're as if they're growing up in four walls. For anyone who doesn't know the premise of the book, it's basically like a woman has been kidnapped and put in this room where she's lived for however many years of her life. She's birthed a son in that time. And it's kind of about her transition then to the normal world and him learning, you know, about the outside world, because it's just completely overwhelming. You know, he's never left room. And I really liked the book, but it was just, I think it kind of hammered home how harrowing it was watching it on screen in a way that I think you can kind of, you make it, when you're reading a book, you kind of make it a little bit more palatable for yourself as you're reading it, to make it a little bit less unsettling. And I think actually watching it on screen, I was just like, oh my god, it's just, you can visually see it and you can visually see what it would be like to have go through that horrible experience. Yes, I think that was my top pick, but then maybe that's the way I've used my imagination when I was reading the book.
Yeah, because I think you're more likely to imagine visually a scene that's happening in a film than you are mm-hmm. to imagine the visuals that you've created by yourself and reading a book. Yeah. So they're a bit more striking in the film. I think that feels like, I think films like that, that because those kind of scenarios do happen in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way they kind of tell the stories is very, very, they have to be quite delicate about it.
Yeah.
It's going to relate to quite a few people.
But
the fact that they get to tell it in the first place, I think is just great.
Yeah, no, and it's definitely worth a read and a watch. What is your other pick for film that was better than the book?
So my other one is, I've gotten a bit better in the past few years. If I know a film is going to, if I know a book is going to become a film, or if a film's yeah. coming, I don't know, it's been inspired by a book, I'll try and read the book first and then watch the film. So I think you just yeah. go a bit more excited. So when Netflix was releasing The Dig by John Preston, I was like, okay, I'm going to read the book. The book's really thin. It's only about just yeah. pages. So it's quite a nice, easy read. You can go through it quite quickly. And again, for anyone who hasn't read the book or watched the film yet on Netflix, it's about the events of the excavation that happened at Sutton Hoo House.
I've actually got a story to tell you. I don't know whether I haven't told you this on the podcast, haven't you? Have I?
No, I don't think you have.
Okay, finish your story and then I'm going to tell my intense story with Sutton Hoo.
So it's about kind of the artifact they find in 1939 at Sutton Hoo House, and that there was perhaps this kind of Viking or even earlier than Viking style boat. They couldn't extract the boat out, the ship even, because of just how old it was. It would have crumbled, yeah. but they could get out the other thing, so they could get out some of the treasures and some of the artifacts, which just gave the British Museum and Sutton Hoo just a bit more kind of information about how we used to live thousand years ago. And there's a bit of an uproar about should they go to British Museum, should they stay at Sutton Hoo, and that's a big film. The reason why I like the film better, I think, just because I'm very much into my history. I'm not a whiz on archaeology, mm-hmm. and some of the terms that were being used in the book, I was like, I was having to look up so many tools on Google just so I could put an image to.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the film kind of helped that, like the visuals helped to explain a lot of things. And there's like a really, really small romance that goes on, which is a bit odd that in the book it's really downplayed and they kind of upplay it a lot.
Wait, which romance do they have in there?
There is some archaeologists, a new young archaeologist couple have just been married. So they kind of play, they kind of dive into the relationship of the Pigotts. So you have Stuart Pigott and you have Peggy Pigott in the film and in the book. They've just got married, they've cut that short, and they've come to Sutton Hoo to help the project. Not a lot is actually known about them. Like even in the book, it's very downplayed.
I was going to say, I don't. So my story of Sutton Hoo is that before university, when, you know, when you're just like trying to fill things to your CV, and I did history at uni. So I was like, I live in Suffolk, which is where Sutton Hoo burial ground is. And I one summer basically volunteered to work at Sutton Hoo and Sutton Hoo House. So I spent a long time at Mrs. Pretty's house, basically doing tours around it, which is why I haven't seen the book, read the book or watched this show, because for me, I'm like, A, I'm probably going to sit there like, that's not true, and that's not true, and that's not true, and that's not true. And second of all, I'm like, the amount I had to learn to do that was so intense that I just feel like I'd be going back to school if I went back and read it. But I probably should just give the film a go, because I'm like, why wouldn't I spend so much time there?
I mean, it has Lily James in it, and I do like a good Lily James.
I do like Lily James. So my pick, my last pick for when the film was better, was actually Crazy Rich Asians. So I read, this is obviously the Kevin Kwan book, I've read the first one and I started reading the second one, and I love the books. Like, they are so juicy. They are just like, they do what they say on the tin. They are just lovely, like, just like delicious, rich person, wealthy. It's basically wealth porn at that point, like, let's be real. And I do love them, but I think part of the joy of the book is the opulence and the just like the fantasy of like this world that we know we're never gonna live in. We're never gonna live in a you know, a land, a country. We're never gonna live in that space where, you know, you're spending £1 million on earrings. So yeah, so it's this, what it's this wealth porn thing. But I think in the book they kind of, they like drop, it's like so much like label name dropping. Well, that's really good. And it's really like, it is what it's meant to do. I think I just love the fact that it's just so visually appealing, the film, in a way that almost your brain is, my imagination is just not capable of that much visualization of just this complete other world. And I just think that book is so visual and so opulent that it needed the film to bring it to life. So that was my second pick.
Now, we've spoken about instances where the film's been better.
Yeah.
Well, just like any book reader, we're now going to moan about some books where, no, this book is better than the film, this book is better than the TV show. But what's one of your top picks for where you thought the book was better than the film?
Okay, so my top pick is Girl on the Train. The book, I think it's like with everything. I think the when I always prefer the book is when you're able to see, it's usually when they're written in first person perspective and you get a lot more of the nuances of what's going on inside the person's brain. And it that is what kind of makes the book better for me, in inverted commas. I think with Girl on the Train, I think the book, I had such a much more emotional reaction to it because I was so bloody frustrated with everything she did. So the protagonist in it is a woman who's an alcoholic, and you're just going through the whole book just being so frustrated at why she's doing the things she's doing. Like, you're almost just like, stop doing that, stop drinking that, stop being obsessing over that, stop doing that. And it's really frustrating. And that was part of my emotional reaction to the book. And while they do that in the film, it was nowhere near the same level for me at all. And I was just sat there like, this is good. And like the twist they get and like that, but it wasn't the same.
No. I feel like when you read such a good book, your expectation for if it ever does get made into a film goes beyond any level that any producer and any
100%. So that is my top pick. What's your top pick?
Mine, and I think we might have touched upon it a few episodes ago, the one by John Mars. I was so excited over Christmas to hear you made into a TV show. First thing that I had, raced home from work, went to watch it, and I was like, what on earth is this? Not into the point of, it hasn't met my expectations.
It's quite gritty, the TV show, because I started watching it, and I'm not sure whether I'm going to continue, if I'm honest.
Yeah, and it's just, they've changed the storyline a lot. So I know in any kind of film, people will sit there and be like, that's not what happens in the film, that's what happens in the film. But I sat there and I watched like the first four episodes because I couldn't watch all of it. And I sat there and I watched the first four episodes and I was like, none of this happened in the film. Like, I can't even pick out things that they've put into the show that happens. So the one by John Mars is this premise that in the book, someone has created this essentially like a dating app that is powered by DNA, and that's how you find like your perfect, they're forever the one match. And the stories that he created, like the contrasting in couples of where like literally a police officer paired up DNA wise with a murderer that she's investigating and she didn't know it was him and he didn't know that she's a police officer, and have like this like cat and mouse game, that storyline just isn't included, it's just cut off. The only similar kind of storyline that they've kept from the book is essentially this married couple that the wife really wants them to take the test to see if they're the perfect match. In the book, they both take the test to find their match. The wife has no match, and the husband's match is a man. So there's like this whole figuring out his sexuality storyline. The way they've then translated that into Netflix of the same act of the married couple both take a DNA test, and the husband gets a match, but it's just another woman, and the current wife befriends the other woman to kind of like learn from her, like, oh, why is this my husband's perfect match? And they accidentally meet, and there's a whole storyline of, well, is he going to leave his wife after he's just said he doesn't really believe in the DNA test? Or is there such thing as actually finding your perfect match through DNA? Because he's feeling this spark that he can't quite explain. Never have I been so disappointed with a book adaptation, because it's just being altered too much.
Yeah. So I will, I'm not sure whether I'll persevere yet with the TV show, I have to say. I'll bring that in at the end. I've realised that I completely missed out on my, I can't believe I even like, didn't put this one. This is number one for me, worst adaptation of a book in the history of time. It is The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt. So
in the this is film adaptation, Ansel Elgort.
Yep. So The Goldfinch is one of my favorite books of all time. It's one of the ones that I gift all the time to people. It is long. It's the basic premise is that a young boy is in a museum in New York with his mother. A bomb goes off. He keeps this painting of the goldfinch that's meant to be really like famous by a really famous artist, and it's kind of, but it's more about like his life and as it kind of he goes through different phases. Like he's a bookseller, and then he goes and moves to be with his dad and his new girlfriend, and it's so intricate, this story, and it to put it even into, for me to explain it even like 2 minutes is just impossible, because it's all to do with just his life story and the importance of this painting. And to be honest, I don't know why I ever thought that it'd be even possible to make it into a movie. It's just not. It's not possible. The book is too complicated. If you want to make it into a TV show, it might be a better way to have done it. So it's Ansel Elgort. And the cast is good. Like, they've got some good actors in there. But I went to see it with one of my best friends. We went to one of the Everyman cinemas where they have like a little sofa and we had a glass of wine. And I just remember us both leaving and just being like, what was that? Because it's both one of our favourite books, and I honestly, like, I wish I could unsee it.
Yeah.
You can't
sit there and you're just like, how on earth will I get those 2 to 3 hours of my life back?
Exactly. And I was also kind of like, but why? Like, I really wanted to sit down and interview the person who made that adaptation and go, why did you decide to keep that in? Why did you decide to take that out? That made no sense. Why did you do that? And like, the big reveal, which comes much later, which, spoiler alert, okay, don't listen to this if you're going to plan to read the book, but it ends up that, because he's like taped up the painting over time, and one of his like friends, in inverted commas, actually took the painting. So he's literally been carrying around for like half his life something that isn't even the painting. It's like a book. And even that was just like, this is not a reveal. That's not how you do like a twist. And so that's been the time I've been most disappointed in a book ever. Book adaptation. So that's my number one. So yeah. Do you have any others?
I can see that you've put Time Traveler's Wife.
So yeah.
I'm very intrigued. I do like both the book. I do like the film as well.
Yeah.
I do like a good Rachel McAdams film.
I love the film if you divorce it from the book.
Okay.
Again, it's one of those things for me. I think it was one of the like first like slightly like juicier books I read when I was younger. And yeah. I was like, oh my God, Scandal, there is sex in here. What is this? Oh my God, I should be blushing. I can't be reading this in public. I think for me, again, it's, I think quite often, I think where book adaptations fall down is where producers and directors are overly ambitious. They see a book and they think, oh, it's so popular, it's going to be great. And the problem is, I think quite often, simpler is better. Where books can like make things much more complicated because they have so much more time to get into that character's psyches and all that stuff, films can't do that as much. They have a two and a bit hour window to do that, and it's just not possible. And for me, I think The Time Traveler's Wife, you got some of it, but I think they had to simplify a lot of it so much. Like, particularly with Rachel McAdams, they made it so, like, you know, she was just with him for her whole life. And in the book, like, she has to learn to live without him. And I don't think they brought that out as much. It was kind of just, like, kind of left being heartbroken.
Yeah, I think in the film they very much played up on, because I think it just followed from The Notebook being out. So I think they were just, this is a grand love story and there's heartbreak, but we're not going to focus on the heartbreak so much, just the love story.
That's the thing, I think they made it less gritty, which I got why they did it, but it was so much less gritty, and it's like actually a worse message, because my takeaway from the book was that he was her great love, but she lived a happy and fulfilled life without him, and she had to learn to be her own person without him.
Yeah.
And I don't think they brought that out really at all in the film.
No. I think literally in the film, after he dies, they just focus on the fact that after he dies, she just remains a mother.
Yeah.
Elmo.
And whereas she actually becomes her own person in the book.
Yeah.
Okay. So that wraps up that bit. So next, we just wanted to talk about the movies that we are excited to see being made into TV/film. Oh, there's so much good stuff coming out. And I really think part of this is to do with the fact that, I think it's interesting seeing how the book industry is developing and kind of becoming cool again in a weird way.
Yeah.
With like people like Reese Witherspoon, people like that. And I do think that people like Reese are leading this movement almost of towards like more interesting books being made into TV shows and like picking up on like what's actually been popular and what they can do. I'm really excited. So the first one I think we're both excited for is the adaptation of Daisy Jones and the Six.
Yeah. I think
it's going to be amazing.
I don't know what I'm more excited for, though. The actual film being made or how the soundtrack to all of the songs I mentioned in the back of the book, how they're
so done. True.
And I kind of wonder of how they're going to structure it. Because obviously in the book, it's made of like a book of interviews. So yeah. These fictional characters you deem to kind of be real because it's out there. It's filled up a bit like a script of their dialogue. And I wonder if they're going to film it as if it's a documentary, like how you've got...
I would love it if they did it like that. I think it would make it... I mean, I would completely understand if they don't do it like that and they make it just much more like a normal TV show. But wouldn't it be so cool and interesting if it was done like that?
Yeah, especially if they had like old Daisy and it flashes back to younger Daisy actually.
Yeah.
With a memory. And I'm very excited to see how they're going to reveal the plot twist.
Yeah. I think they'll probably do hints of it, but I don't think they won't make it like a documentary because they'll lose audience if they make it too like a documentary. Like the casual Netflix person who hasn't heard of Daisy Jones and turns that on probably won't be gripped by that as much as they would by a TV show.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm also very excited.
I kind of wish they would.
Yeah, I'm quite excited too. I think from where it's such a music-heavy book and a music-heavy story, just like when A Star Is Born came out and the soundtrack blew up for that, I do wonder what the soundtrack...
I have that one on vinyl.
Yeah, so I do wonder what the soundtrack for this is going to be like. Because obviously, Taylor Jenkins Reid, you put all the lyrics of
their
successful album in the back. But nothing about like chords or melody, no, like sheet music wise, just lyrics. So I do wonder how they're going to interpret that. And I hope they don't change the lyrics in it, because the lyrics are there to kind of support the storyline. Especially throughout the book when they say, oh, well, I done this, and then Daisy changed it to this and it changed the meaning. So I hope they don't alter the songs too much, because the songs we play are really, really
important. Yeah. God, I love that book. But the next one we've got written down is The Summer Job, just because we had Lizzie Dent on the podcast last week, and she had a hint that it was potentially in the works to become a TV show. So I think we need to give that one a shout out, that we'll be super excited for that one when it comes out.
Yeah, I especially want to see how they're going to like film it in Scotland, because when you think about
it, oh, I think it'd be beautiful.
Yeah, a lot of Netflix films, if they are filmed in Scotland, the way they'll film it is that it's very remote, or that it's very set in like a very, very old time. Mm-hmm. Whereas the book's so modern, and it does make a lot of modern references.
Yeah.
I want to see how they're going to like visually capture it in Scotland.
100%.
That I'm excited about. And I just wonder who's going to play Birdie.
I know. It's always the weirdest things, isn't it? The casting is always the most interesting thing. Actually, the one which next, that leads us on to our next pick, which is Leave the World Behind, which we've already spoken about on the podcast before. But the fact that Denzel Washington's going to be in that one, and Nicole Kidman, was it?
Denzel Washington and Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts. Oh, it's going to be fascinating.
Can we agree? And to be honest, like, I do like Julia Roberts. But
I've never seen her in that kind of grittier film.
Yeah, especially when there's that whole scene of they've only known each other for a few days. She's in the hot tub, and then the other couple then joins, and it's kind of like this like really weird dynamic and tension.
So is she going to be playing the one of the younger couple or the older couple?
So Denzel Washington is playing G.H. Washington.
Yeah.
Who claims that he owns the house.
Mm-hmm.
Julie Roberts is playing the woman, so Clay's wife.
I'm with you.
For the summer. Just because the character, whenever Julie Roberts has played a character, it's always been quite a down-to-earth character, quite a relatable woman character. Or if she has...
The main character in this is very, very... She's interesting.
She's very interesting and, like... She is quite judgmental
of 100%.
G.H. Washington and his wife, and has quite a lot of like bias against people, which I want to see how Julia Roberts plays up to that.
Yeah, I'm interested. I think those are our top picks at the moment, but I'm sure we'll have so many more as things develop. I guess we wanted to also focus on which books we really want, like top of our list, if we had a wish list for books we wish were made into movies. What's top of yours?
So another Taylor Jenkins Reid book, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
My God.
I listened to it was the first audio.
I feel like it's our human right for this to be made into a TV show.
Yeah, because it was the first ever audiobook I listened to, and I used to listen to it. It used to take me like an hour's drive to work, so I used to listen to it in that hour while driving there and driving back. And I kind of sat there and I was like, this just needs to be made into a film, because there's so many characters. It's very...
You can already see it. They can break it down. Book each. They do a 7-part series, and each part of the series is one different... Like, all of them are just called by different people's names. I already see it.
Yeah, because
the only thing is, who would play Evelyn?
Yeah, because I get a lot of Elizabeth Taylor vibes. In Hugo, so it needs to be someone who's quite as classy and as quite striking as that. Just because so much happens, and especially like, I like the aesthetic of like it's set in that like, old Hollywood, like it's like the kind of Hollywood where you kind of really had to work for it and go for it. Just like these, anyone can come in, like her being really glitzy and glammy, kind of set in like Audrey Hepburn, Marilyn Monroe kind of times.
So apparently it is in the works to be made into a series adaptation, but who knows whether that will happen.
Mm.
And there's a big difference between it being made into a series adaptation and it being something that never hits the UK consciousness.
No, but it definitely needs to be a TV series. A film, it would just it would just cut out too much. I don't cherry pick enough if it was a film. It has to be a TV series, I think.
Interesting. So they said, so I've actually got two picks based on some like fan theories and things like that of who would play Evelyn and who would play Cecilia. And the person who played Evelyn, they said Ana de Armas. And Celia St. James to be played by Saoirse Ronan. And I actually think that's pretty bloody spot on. With blonde hair, like a Marilyn Monroe-esque.
Yes. Yes, because she is...
She's Ben Affleck, or someone, she's doing Ben Affleck or something like that.
I really liked her performance in Knives Out. And I think
she
plays a Latin American character very, very well and very, very honestly, which I think is very much needed for
Hugo. Love
that. I do like a bit
of
Saoirse Ronan.
The other one that I was on top of my list was Verity, which is the Colleen Hoover book that was like a cult classic a few years ago. Just I think it's kind of falls in that similar hype of like Girl on Train and Gone Girl vibes. I think it'll be super popular, and it's quite a simple one to make. In like, I think it would be really interesting to see what the actors and actresses did with it, because it's basically just like, you know, based in one house for the whole thing. And I actually quite like those kind of simple setting films where it's all about the drama and the high stakes, and it just is about the evolution of like the tension building. And I think it could be a really good adaptation, so that's one of mine. The other one, I feel like there is a way for American Dirt to actually have a comeback in terms of the book publishers actually doing this right.
Here we go.
What do you mean?
Here we go. So explain what you think their approach should be.
So, obviously, there was this huge controversy around American Dirt, because it was written by Janine Cummings, who's a white woman, and it was all... And the problem with it was not her writing it. The problem was that they really promoted the crap out of this book, and haven't done so for Latinx authors. And if you look at the numbers and you look at all those things, the amount of money poured into white authors is so much more than Latinx and black authors. I think where it's a story, if you take it removed from that controversy, the story itself of like the crap and the shit and the impossible stories that people have to tell about the immigration from South America into the United States of America is impossible. I think I'd like to see some kind of like Latinx version of this story told, and have some form of a TV show or a film made about it that would then make people understand like just how harrowing it is, because I think a lot of the way that a lot of people take in information and the way that they kind of have an opinion about things in the world is quite often people do it through watching TV shows and watching culture. Not everyone sits down to watch the news every day. Not everyone sits down to read things. This is the way they take in their information. And I wish there was some form of film delicately done where it was written by a Latinx author, the room was filled with people who understood inherently the experience. And I just think that I would just really like to see that story told in a way that was fitting and was appropriate, and that it was supported by people who'd been through that experience. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think it just needs...
So even though I put American Dirt on my list, I don't necessarily mean that I want that film made. I don't want that book to be made into a TV show. I want a version of that story to be told.
Yeah, I think it needs to be made by like a government of people who are actually like from that culture, from storyline so that they can reflect it correctly.
I don't think they could ever make that book into a TV show because it would just be so inappropriate considering the amount of backlash they've received. It would just be like, it basically would be a big statement about them not listening to Latinx voices, and they cannot do that. Yeah. But I would like to see a version of this story told in a way that is appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And she gets off her soapbox. Okay, what's your last pick?
I'm really looking forward to, it's a book that I read a few weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. People Like Her by Ellery Lloyd. Lloyd is a married couple author. So it's two authors that go by the name of Ellery Lloyd.
I didn't realise that. That's cool.
And the reason why I really want it to be made into a film is because there's such a heavy kind of magnifying glass on social media. Social media plays a lot, plays a really big role in People Like Her. Of essentially the storyline is that there's this social media mum and she's so famous on like Instagram and like on her blogs on her mum tricks and tips. And she essentially gets an online stalker, and spoiler alert, an online stalker who is never caught. And I think just having that visual of seeing what the posts are like and then seeing how then that stalker has then gone down that loophole, like that Alice in Wonderland, like rabbit hole of falling into like the social media world, blaming the social media mum for all of the issues in her life, and it just growing darker and darker. And also like this sense of from where the mum has put all of her family on social media, and that's why her campaigns are so successful, because she's putting a lot of pictures of her children there, so a lot of mums and dads are then relating to the picture of the children. How that would then play out, because I know there's quite a lot of mixed reviews of kind of like the exposure of children on social media. Should they be on there? Should pictures of them be on there? Should you be able to share with your friends and family pictures of your family, or should you just not at all and just leave it to face to face? And I want to see how that's going to be captured, especially because as the world's opening back up again, threats like that unfortunately will start back out. So I think that it's a very much a very relatable conversation. I think if they were to make it into a film, I don't think there's enough events for it to warrant a TV series. But I think if it was to be made into a film, or even just like an ITV drama, like a three-part drama, just as the world's opening back up, I think it would be very, very
good. I would love that idea. Cool. So I guess we're at the end of our books to TV shows debate. So should we talk about like what we've been up to this week in terms of what we've been reading, listening to, and all the things?
Oh, so I have been listening to, what have I been listening to? I've been listening to Demi Lovato's album, Nights of the Devil, because she's done a really like amazing collaboration with Ariana Grande, and both their voices are just such powerhouses.
Yeah.
Which I just love. Books wise, I'm really excited. This week, Book Club is finally going back to face to face.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Because we meet the six people requirement. Hopefully we can start getting more than six members when the world actually
goes
fully normal. But we're doing something a bit different this month. We're going to be reading Zadie Smith.
Ooh, that's fun.
But instead of us all reading the same book, we each read a different book of hers.
Cool.
At the month, so when we all get back together during May, then we can all say, well, my Zadie Smith book was about this and mine was about this and mine was about that.
So which one's yours?
So I have got Swing Time, I think.
Why did I know you were going to say that?
I've got Swing Time. I've definitely not fixed it, so I get like the most music heavy in one. I think one of my friends has then got Teeth. And I think it's just got to be nice to see kind of like her writing style and to say, oh, well, I don't like what was mentioned in my book, or I don't like this approach, but I like how she did it in this book and how she done that one. And especially because there are so many authors that I would love to read all of their works, but I sit there and I go, I kind of haven't got the time to decide if I'm going to read it and like it or not. This is kind of my guinea pig experiment of what Zadie Smith books will I like? Okay, you've given me a bad review, yeah. I'll read that one. You've given me a great review, I'm going to read that one. So I'm really excited to, for that. What have you been listening to or reading this week?
I've been reading so much recently. I think, like, I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to read anything again as soon as the world opens up. So I just finished Anna Kay, because Anna Kay, the sequel, comes out soon. And I was like, oh, you know, I've been seeing it on Open Bookstagram, thought I'd give it a read. So I really enjoyed that. It's basically a retelling of Anna Karenina based in New York. So it's very Gossip Girl, very crazy, combined with Crazy Rich Asians.
Oh, I
love that. It's all sex, teens, you know, it's drugs. There's so many drug references to it. And I was like, why am I so scandalized by this? But it was good. It was definitely worth a read, just as like a light pick me up. I listened on audiobook to Sex and City and Us, which was recommended on Sentimental and City, which is Dolly Alderton and Caroline O'Donoghue's podcast, Diving into Sex and City. If anyone's fans of Sex and City, listen to that podcast, because it's just like a joyful fan celebration of the TV show. And as we all know, I'm obsessed with that TV show. So for me, it was like spending time with my friends discussing Sex and City. So I listened to the audiobook. I really enjoyed it. It's just a kind of like deep dive into the behind the scenes. I read Girl with a Louding Voice, which was great. It's very much, you need to get in the headspace to kind of sit down and read it. It's a very easy read. It's kind of about a girl in Nigeria who basically gets sold to be the third wife for this horrible man who's a lot older than her. And she escapes, and it's kind of about her quest for education and to educate herself. And it's just amazing seeing, you know, how lucky we are. And just hearing someone who values education so much, because I think it's something we just take so for granted in the West. And it's just such a gift. And I really enjoyed seeing it through her eyes. And then finally, I got sent a copy of The Final Revival of Opal and Nev, which is Dawny Walton's debut novel, which is out in the States now, but it is coming out in the UK later this month. It is definitely, for anyone who's fans of Daisy Jones and the Six, it's like a grittier version of that. It is about a punk duo, and one, the woman is black, who's Opal, and Nev is white. He's like a gingery, I imagined him as kind of Prince Harry in my head, rock star. And it's kind of about their rise and fall, and it's much more dealing with race relations, and, you know, there's a riot that happens that is spurred by people having the Confederate flag at one of their showcases, and Opal's reaction to that. And I think, going back to our conversation about like people taking in information in different forms, for me, I always love reading things like that, which make me really understand just what that flag means and how awful it is and what awful statement it is. And I thought it was just really great read. I read a lot of things, people say it's quite chaotic, because it's not necessarily like, it feels much more like an oral history in a way that Daisy Jones read as a story. This feels much more like an oral history.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to bear with it a little bit. And then in terms of watching, I watched a bit of the This Is a Robbery, which is the thing about the art heist in Boston, which is really interesting. I never heard anything about it before. It's just kind of like a true crime doc. Was quite good, quite worth a listen, watch. And music-wise, I have been listening to Eric Church's new album, Hot, which is the first of his three-part Hot and Soul series on repeat. And, of course, I've been listening to Taylor Swift, Fearless.
Taylor's version.
That's just all the From the Vault tracks, just on repeat. So, yeah, sorry, that was my, like, word vomit. I feel like I've consumed so much content recently, and I'm now reading The Prophets.
I feel like we should put that as like a side effect of like doing a podcast. Is side effects include word vomit, overreading,
word vomit.
binge watching.
Binge watching. I feel like I'm like, I've got to read something. But I feel like my reading will probably slow down in the next month. I'm like trying to make my peace with that while also kicking myself a little bit, because when the world opens up, we're just naturally like, my reading time is usually like before bed, and now if I go out for dinner, it's like dinner, come back, chill for a bit, and then bed.
Exactly.
So yeah, what are you excited for next week before we wrap things up?
I'm excited to, and this is a big thing, I'm excited to finally take some advice from Generation Z and get a pair of straight leg jeans instead of my skinny.
I was like, what are you going to say? Like, are you going to join TikTok? Like, what's going to happen here?
And we'll get a middle part in, though.
You joke, but look! Look what I've got! I've got a middle part in!
It worked for you, but...
Curtain bangs! Like, what is happening with me over here?
It works for you, but if I do a middle part, I look like Lin-Manuel Miranda playing Alexander Hamilton. But it's not their look.
Don't you make me die.
Next week, I'm investing in a pair of straight leg jeans instead of skinny jeans, which it's a big thing when shops haven't been open for so long.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited. I feel like we can't still try stuff on in the shops, but...
No, it's like, it's got to be a lot of me holding it up against my hip.
Holding it up and then be like, I guess that's going to fit, that's fine.
Yeah, that will do. That will do, Donkey. That will do. I'll take that.
Yeah.
What are you looking to next week?
I feel like I've got a few more, like... I feel like I haven't got as many things in like the diary that I kind of thought I would. So I'm actually kind of, I feel like I've had like a few days of just being like heavy socializing, and I've got a few days break, and then Friday, Saturday, I'm back to socializing again. So it will kind of be, it's like, it's almost like easing back into being a social person.
Yeah.
I think I need that. And then this week we've got the Tyler Rich Happy Off half hour on Thursday with Destination Country. And I have got a stack of books that I need to like sort through and like be like, what am I going to read first? Like, what are we going to kind of dive into? So yeah, that's been my exciting week, but I think that's everything. Cool. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and tune in next week for another exciting episode. And make sure to follow us on all the things at www.offtherecorduk.com, and follow Madeline at...
So my handle is still, and I'm very, very happy I've sit on this, is @hey_ it's Madeline. Where can reading peeps find you?
And they can find me at Imogen L. Marshall and at ever at offtherecorduk.com. Thanks everyone. Bye.